Hello, diamond beauties and interdimensional beings of light. It's Lisa here, your mystic guide, inviting you to come and take a ride with me as we journey through space and time. Our mission is to create conscious content for 1111D, sharing resources of light for the new reality. Welcome to the Buddhist Biohacker.
Buddhist Biohacker would like to thank our partners Block Therapy, Purity Coffee, Dry Farm Wines, Omnia, and 2-1 Photography. Information can be found on lisamgunshore.com. Join our forum at miwi.com/Buddhist Biohacker and watch live on YouTube on the Buddhist Biohacker channel.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning and welcome. It's Podcast Wednesday and welcome to the Buddhist Biohacker. As always, we are creating conscious content for 1111D, and I am your host, Lisa Gunshore. Welcome to everyone who joins in the live feed today. You can absolutely use your comment boxes, whether you're on YouTube, Periscope, Apple TV, or Twitter, to be able to ask your questions, share your comments, stories. We love hearing from you. That's the best part. And I'm really excited to kick off our Wednesday. It's September 16th, and we are here with Jeff Strong from the Strong Institute. Welcome back, Jeff.
Wow, thanks. Nice to see you again, Lisa.
Oh, you too. I just really enjoyed our time together when we first met. It was like the beginning of Buddhist Biohacker's journey, really. And here we are 100 episodes later, and you're 101 today. So it's so crazy. And so I'm just really happy to have you back. I think you had a lot to share, and our community really loved everything that you had to share last time. I think a lot of people nerded out on your particular podcast about the brain. And so welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. I would love for you to just take a few minutes for those who are new to who you are, who missed the first episode, just to share a little bit about who you are and what the Strong Institute is all about.
Okay. Well, I'm a drummer, and what we do is we use musical rhythm to impact brain function. And we go at it from a bunch of different directions, but the majority of what we do is what we call our REI custom program. And it's basically auditory brain stimulation using very complex, unpredictable drumming rhythms. And it comes from traditions that I learned when I was at Musicians Institute in the early 80s. And I learned traditions and then took what I considered all the cultural elements out of it. And we just wanted to look at it from a purely physiological perspective. What happens when you just have a rhythm impacting your brain? What can you do with it? And we've explored a whole bunch of different things. We do everything from the subtle energy systems to, you know, changing the neurological patterns to, you know, most of our clients with the custom program are in the developmental disability spectrum. They have ADHD, autism, any of the developmental disabilities. It transcends any kind of historical cultural references. You know, drumming, we often think of it being very tribal. Well, it's also very neurological because our brains are rhythmically organized and we can influence those internal rhythms with an external rhythmic pattern. And so that's what we're all about, is kind of exploring that and expanding that. And we look at it from both just an optimization of the brain, you know, like working with the people with developmental disabilities, to what it means to alter consciousness. What happens when we go into an altered state? What does that look like? Meditation, shamanic journey, things like that. And so really understanding that drumming auditory rhythm allows us to influence the brain in a variety of ways. And it's just a matter then of being able to optimize that and direct it in very specific ways itself. So that's what we're doing primarily.
Yeah, it's so incredible. I started taking your shamanic course and I just love it. And you have so many books out and you also have Brain Shift Radio. And I wanted to take a minute to talk about what Brain Shift Radio is, because as a a psychic medium to be able to go and find, you know, I'm always looking for meditations and you, there's YouTube videos and sound waves and brain waves and all these things. And brain shift radio is just super cool. I just think it's a really cool thing to talk about. So if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'd love to. That's my personal passion project. It's a dream of what I've wanted to create since the get-go. You know, our custom program is custom made, completely custom made. We do a comprehensive intake process. We make the recordings. We are building progressively the recordings over a period of time, really designed specifically to a person. It's just the drumming, just the rhythm. Aside from being a drummer, when I was in school, I had to play a melodic instrument like every drummer has to, because you need to learn music theory. And most drummers play mallet percussion. You know, they'll play vibraphone and marimba and things like that. Well, I got into synthesizers and was really into keyboards and sound design. So Brainship Radio took the concept of our custom program where we're tailoring the music to the individual. It kind of watered it down a little bit. Instead of being completely custom, which is really complicated, we made it personalized. So in other words, you choose a category, you choose an intention, and the music is chosen for you. But what we did that is something that I thought was the best thing in the world was we deliver it in two music streams. We deliver the musical rhythm, and then we deliver the ambient synthesizer instrument. So you can adjust the balance between the two yourself. And that's what gives it its extra power. So you choose your category, you choose your intensity. So say you want to do calm, you'll say, you know, I want to calm, and then you'll say, well, I'm kind of stressed. I'd like to calm down. So that's a level two, by the way. And then it'll choose music that has a rhythm and an ambient track, and then you can adjust the balance between the two. And then as you rate your experience with the music, it starts learning what you respond to and can now start generating much more personalized music than it would start with. And it's an evolution and really being able to experience what happens when you start dialing in that level of calm. Because even though our brains are kind of organized in very similar ways, we can calm the brain through, you know, certain tempos and certain types of rhythms. But if you start telling us how it's working for you, we can really refine it, because playing a rhythm at 8 beats per second has a different impact than playing a rhythm at 8.2 beats per second and slightly different rhythms, or slowing the rhythm down and speeding it back up can have a huge impact. And so Brainship Radio allows us to do all of that. And we've been working on a new launch of Brainship Radio, which we're hoping to have available in the next few weeks. Yeah. It is what we call our universal adaptive player, and it's going to another level. From the user's perspective right now, it's the same basic idea. You choose your category, you choose your intensity, you mix the balance between the ambient and the rhythm. But as we develop our player, we are developing what's called a brain computer interface. So you'll be able to take a consumer grade EEG device, like the MindWave or something like that, connect it to Brainship Radio, and we can actually see what your brain is doing in response to the music we're delivering. And then we can, in real time, keep refining the process. So if you're going along and you're looking for calm, we can be watching your brain and seeing what's happening and deciding at that point that we need to either speed up or slow the rhythm down or change the ambient or change the rhythm itself in order to get your brain to respond, because everybody's brain is a little bit different. And that's the exciting part about where we're going. Right now, it's pretty cool anyway, because it is very personalized.
And yeah.
So yeah, that's my personal favorite thing in the world. So,
well, yeah, and I want to pick your brain a little bit about this too, because I have a couple questions. One is, how do folks go get their brains mapped? Like, how does your intake process work? Because I was curious about that because I kind of want to do that. I think, gosh, I wonder what's going on with my brain with all the years of meditation and trance work and things that I do. But I also have a question with Brainship Radio. So, for example, I have many students who are studying trance meditation and trance channeling, and of course going into a hypnotic trance or into a light hypnosis state versus being in a meditative state are very different.
Right.
I'm wondering how you've looked at those things and if you've looked at them, and is there support through Brain Shift Radio to help kind of shift your brain into those kinds of spaces?
Yeah. To answer your first question, when we do our custom program, we're using a behavioral intake. And the reason for that is when we started our custom program, I started doing the research on that in 1992. And back then and even today, there's no objective physiological measure of what it means to have autism. Autism is, and the developmental disabilities in general, are diagnosed through behavioral characteristics. And so we use that same methodology for being able to create our custom programs. So all of our research has been done on the behavioral model. So in other words, when we did our early double-blind placebo-controlled studies, we tracked what was happening based upon the criteria from the DSM-4, which is the manual we use to diagnose these conditions. And so we're using those as the rating. So our custom program is all based upon that same model. So we'll be looking, for instance, if it's an adult with ADHD, for instance, which is a pretty large group of our clients, we'll be looking at, you know, how well they focus. Do they hyper-focus? Is there an OCD component present as well? Is there a mood component as well? Is there a sleep component as well? And we look at that, and that's how we determine what's happening. And the way I used to describe it in our provider trainings is that with our research, because of the way we kind of approach things and build our program, when you do this intake process of ours, which can be anywhere from 100 to 200 questions, it's a rating scale. So you'll answer, basically, it'll say, I have trouble sitting still. And you'll rate it as being not relevant, slightly irrelevant, pretty relevant, or very relevant. From a practical perspective, each answer for that question relates to a certain type of rhythm, a certain type of rhythmic approach. And so when we do the intake work, taking the behavioral characteristics, we're applying rhythms to it. And what makes that process so powerful is after a week or two, now we're looking at how somebody responds. So somebody will say, okay, I saw an improvement in my sleep. I didn't wake up three times. I only woke up one time last night. And so we start seeing patterns there. And then we take that original intake and we adjust the rhythms that go into the next track. And we do this process progressively over time. And so somebody's recordings progressively evolve so that we can change what the brain is doing. And so that's the core of what we do with the custom program. And BrainShift Radio is kind of a simplified version of that, because instead of looking at a long-term change like our custom program does, we're looking at episodic changes. So you want to focus, you turn BrainShift Radio on, you focus. As far as looking at altered consciousness, it's an interesting thing. We've done a lot of EEG research. That's primarily what I'm doing on my off time. And we're looking at not only my brain, which is somewhat unique, I'm finding. One thing about this, just to go sideways for a half second, one thing about this whole process of entrainment, and entrainment is what we're looking at here when we're looking at altered consciousness. And entrainment is simply the synchronization of your brainwave patterns to an external pulse, an external stimulus. Brainwave entrainment, auditory driving is another word for it. In other words, an auditory rhythm, an auditory signal will drive the frequencies of the brain. There's another form of this called photic driving, which has to do with lights, flashing lights, also doing the same thing. This process is somewhat of a learned process with our brains. So the more we encounter the stimulus, the quicker and deeper our brains go into the state that we're trying to entrain them to. So what I'm finding is that when I hook myself up to the EEG, and I start a stimulus, and it doesn't work as well when I'm playing as when I'm listening. Once you engage the motor center of the brain and you're playing the rhythms, it changes what we can see and what can happen. The best way to get experience with this and to feel the power of this is to be listening rather than playing, which is great for most people because a lot of the rhythms can be kind of complex. And so you'd be spending a lot of time learning how to play, which isn't bad in itself. But But so I'll put a recording on and I'll put the EEG on, and within a couple of seconds my brain will synchronize and you'll see me go into a real deep state. I'll hook somebody else up that doesn't have experience with this. And the first few times, what we'll see is will be really subtle, if anything at all. And then over time, you'll start seeing the buildup of the entrainment, the response. And so I've learned a lot in the last several years doing the EEG research with other people, really understanding how variable, number one, people's brains are, how there's a very different susceptibility among people, and how, especially as, when you're talking about an altered state of consciousness and meditation, how someone's experience meditating really plays into their ability to engage, their brain's ability to engage. So for those people who are practicing meditation, who are practicing trance work, who are doing shamanic journeying, especially if they're doing it with the drumming, they're going to see a much more profound impact having the drumming assist them. And I have yet to find a point where the drumming doesn't help. I've been meditating the deep trance work kind of meditation since the late 80s, when I first discovered the shamanic end of it in my research, and then studied with a particular teacher I was studying with. And you probably know this feeling when you're going in and you settle in and you kind of transcend your body, you transcend time, you're kind of in what I call this fuzzy place of everything is just kind of like, it's all metaphor at that point. You know, it's all so abstract. That doesn't happen terribly often for most of us. Most of the time in my daily meditations, I'm kind of in this rote place of doing the work that I need to do. You know, the whatever those steps are, the breathing, the whatever. I don't really hit that transcendence place that often. It's kind of more random. But whenever I bring the rhythm into it, it becomes more consistent. It becomes something that's much more predictable. And so I find that no matter how long you've been doing and how deep the work is, having the support of the auditory signal can really have an impact. And it doesn't have to be drumming, by the way. There's other ways to do it, especially when you're talking about this level of consciousness. This level of consciousness, by the way, is a brainwave state called theta. And theta is an internally directed state where we're disassociated from our external world and our physical senses. And the deeper we get into this state, the more distance there is between our physical awareness and this other world. And so that's why, you know, I'll get into the why later, but if you get into a really deep meditative state, a really deep trance, disassociated state, you lose sense of your body. You lose sense of that space. This is all theta, and it exists between about 4 beats per second, 4 cycles per second, as far as your brain waves go, up to around 8. 8 is the top end, and it's transitions into a state called alpha, which is an externally directed state, which is considered relaxed alert. That's a great state to be in. A lot of people who meditate, this is where their brains go. Normal brainwave activity is around 13 to 30 cycles per second, 13 to 30 hertz. That's the state called beta. When our brains are in beta, we've got different levels of activity in different parts of our brain depending on what we're doing. So if you're engaged in some sort of a physical activity, you'll have some beta activity in that part of the brain that's associated with it. If you're thinking certain things, that's the part of the brain that'll be associated. You'll see that theta activity or that beta activity there. When most people meditate, their brains will shift from this beta state to the alpha state. Roughly 10 beats per second, 10 hertz. And this is amplified and supported by closing our eyes. So most of us, when we meditate, we close our eyes. When we close our eyes, that 10 hertz frequency in our brain tends to activate. We start breathing and we're doing a mindful meditation. That 10 hertz frequency will then amplify a bit, depending on the person. It depends how much your mind is going all over the place, how well you can do the meditations where you can clear your mind a bit. Be present. The more present you are, the more you're going to see a spike in that 10 hertz. As people develop some really good trance skills, and it is a skill that we all develop, and some people are more adept at it than others. There's some people who it's always going to be a challenge, and there are other people who just slide right into it. And I don't know why, but as you start developing that ability to distance yourself from that alpha state when you're meditating. So let's just look at the beginning meditator. You're breathing. You're constantly refocusing your mind, right, to breathe, to focus on your breath, to follow a mantra, to whatever it is that you do to hone your brain in to one place so you're not in monkey mind, so it's not jumping everywhere. You can pretty much assured that if your brain is jumping from place to place, you're not getting much beyond that 10 hertz. So you're really focused now, and you're able to hone in on your breath, and all of a sudden you find yourself kind of drifting, right? What we see at that point is the brain starts shifting, and that 10 hertz spike that we'll see in EEG will start moving down into theta. And for most people, it won't start as a spike. It'll start as kind of like these disparate waves of theta activity starting to rise above this peak that's happening at 10 hertz. And it'll be down at 4 or 5 cycles per second, maybe 6. This is when you know you're starting to get into this altered, really altered state, this trance state that mediums are trying to get into. And this is fairly rare for most people. And it takes some time, and it takes the ability to surrender in some way. I'm not really sure how that works or how one manages to do it, other than for most people, it's kind of spontaneous. And this is saying that you're doing this without the drumming, by the way. I'll bring the drumming into it in a minute. But once you're in that state, now you're disassociated from your physical body, and you can be open to these realms, because theta is really about not having awareness of our physical senses. Therefore, we're more aware of other senses that we have. That's sixth sense. Other realms that many of us are sure is there, but society doesn't seem to think it is. And that's what makes a lot of us feel like we're crazy, especially when we're younger, when we can sense what's going on there. Yeah. So getting into that state is not terribly easy for most people. And once you bring the drumming in, now you can support the transition from the alpha, that spot that we can all get to if we can just close our eyes and breathe and focus, to theta by letting the drum drive our brains into it. And again, every brain is a little different, and some people are more susceptible to being able to jump into that than others. But the people who can spontaneously get that theta activity, we find are able to really get a spike when the drumming happens. The drumming just accentuates the focus of the ability to do that, and takes somebody who's got kind of to look at it from a shamanic perspective. The shamanic state of consciousness that a lot of people talk about, and this is something Michael Harner from his book, The Way of the Shaman, talked about way back when he wrote that in 1980, is the shamanic state of consciousness is often considered a dual state, where you've got one foot in alpha, one foot in your physical awareness, and another foot in this other realm. And this is often facilitated by the shamanic practitioner also drumming, because once you, like I said, once you engage the physical movement, there's a part of your brain that's not going to completely shift. So the shamanic state of consciousness is a dual state. And that is true for most shamanic practitioners in the world. But those people who are really adept, who are really practiced at this, they don't have a foot in alpha any longer. They're completely and wholly down in this deep theta state. And when we've talked to people after doing EEG and seeing the spike at 3 or 4 cycles per second, right at the bottom end of theta, there was a period you were, you know, we could see it. What were you feeling? What were you sensing? I was off of nowhere. I wasn't feeling or sensing my body at all. I was in this other place, and they'll describe these really powerful, vivid imagery that they experienced, right? These strange metaphorical experiences that felt really real, right? You almost feel them in your body, but it's not your body. It's you're out there, right? This is the out of body experience that we're all going for. That, well, not maybe all of us, but all of us, right?
Yeah, all of us here are.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what we're looking for. That's what we want, because that opens our psyche. That opens our connection to the oneness, right? And that's what we're going for. That's that spike that we're seeing, and there's more to it than that. Maybe at another time we can talk about as it relates to psychedelics, because there's a lot of research being done on psychedelic drugs and what's going on there. And those researchers are not using EEG to distinguish this altered state. Mm-hmm. They're looking at it from a different language. I can make that translation at some point when we talk again, but
yeah.
From an EEG perspective, what we're seeing is this spike at the low theta. And when we see it, we know, we're pretty sure anyway, that person is really deep in this amazing place. And that can be helped by drumming. And it's really fairly simple. It doesn't require a lot of technique. You're better off listening than playing, though. But it's pretty cool that this technique has been around for 30, 40,000 years. It still works, even with our what we consider our pretty modern brain. Which is not really that different than it was 30,000 years ago. We're just more distractible, and it's harder for us to get into the initial state. But once we get into this altered state, it's pretty much the same as it's always been. So that's a very long answer to your question.
Oh, but I love it so much. And I took some notes while you were talking, because there's a lot in there that is interesting to me. So being a trans channel, I am one of those people who just naturally like went into these altered states of consciousness and connect with these beings and energies and other dimensions and all these things. And so over the years, I was studying, you know, what does this really mean to be in trance? What is really happening to me? Because I wanted to understand where I was going and what was happening. And so there's some things you said that are so interesting. And one of them is, I feel, and something that I teach my students is, when you're practicing meditating, there's lots of different ways to meditate. There's breathing techniques and sound and all these things. But when you are trance meditating, it seems easeful, or the best way to do it the same way every time. So when you're talking about like how you connect into that state, and even using the drumming to connect into that state, that's very interesting to me when you talk about brain entrainment also, because I think there's definitely something to kind of having this systematic way. Like, I always go into trance the same way. I go down the staircase. It's the same every time. I know how I feel when I get there. I know when I've left, as you say, that fuzzy space. It's like when I get to the bottom of the staircase, I know that I'm out. And that's just how it's always been for me. And so that's interesting. And I'm curious your thoughts about, because that's a lot of what you were just talking about, is like going into it in this same way. But the other thing that's interesting to me, since we last spoke, I've really been playing around with the drum piece because of what you're talking about and how that the drums do assist you going into these different states. Some drumming really irritates me. And some of it is awesome and takes me right in. So I'm just curious, like, why that is. Like, and because some folks, and I've had folks in journeys where my husband, which you know is a drummer also, you know, he's drumming and it is irritating to people. And other people love it. And so what is that about? Like, can you explain what that's about too? I'm curious about that as well.
It's about tolerance. It's about habituation. And we've looked at this a lot over the last almost 30 years. One thing early on, and I'm going to go sideways here for a second. One thing early on we saw in our research with autism was, this is the most curious thing. I started out, by the way, when I was doing our early research, playing in people's living rooms and playing in schools. And so I'd play for somebody, watch their reaction to the drumming, and I'd make a recording of what I played, because I'd go in with my recorder, my tape recorder, and then I would give them a recording to listen to. And what we were looking for was two things. Number one, their initial response. And the other thing is, what would happen if they consistently got the stimulus? Would it change the way they responded to their environment? One thing I discovered early, and at the same time, I was also teaching African drumming, hand drumming, and I was doing shamanic courses, shamanic journeying courses. And one thing I found was that for typical people, people that were not on the autism spectrum, I could play rhythms that were pretty predictable. I could stick with the rhythm for a long time. I wouldn't have to vary it a lot. Now, keeping in mind that I'm playing at a pretty fast tempo, I'm playing at 8 beats per second, which is an externally directed state, the low end of the alpha state of consciousness. And I'm sorry if this gets a little bit too esoteric, but I'm playing very quickly. What this means for most people is that you're externally directed. I'm going to need to play a rhythm that's more unpredictable, something that's more variable than I would if I'm playing slower. The shamanic rhythm is half the tempo, and it is absolutely repetitive. So as I'm playing for people and I'm watching people's responses to what I'm playing, whether it's somebody who's typical in my drumming class, somebody who's in a shamanic journey, or a child with autism who is having a tantrum right now, what am I going to play? And how are they responding to it? And what I found was people on the autism spectrum, by and large, needed a much more complex, variable rhythm than a typical person. They were the typical person. I could play something like this. I'm going to play just a simple, what's called a 3-3-2 rhythm. It's the most common therapeutic drumming rhythm in the world. It's a very simple one. I can play that rhythm for 5 minutes for someone who's got a typical brain function, and they're not going to get annoyed necessarily by it. They're going to find it kind of comfortable. You do that with somebody in with autism, especially if they're having a tantrum, you're going to see even a worse tantrum. You can't play that way. It has to be something like this. Got to constantly be changing and evolving. Otherwise, their brains key into it, and it becomes annoying for them. Mm. And if you were to take the large spectrum of what we work with, and you were to look at the developmental disability spectrum, which at the most severe end of it would be a nonverbal person with autism, for instance. And then from there, you get to the higher functioning people with autism and maybe Asperger syndrome. And then you'd have the ADHD spectrum. And then you'd have the learning disabilities spectrum. Learning disabilities being the least affected in this big, long spectrum. And we've done double-blind placebo-controlled research on this whole spectrum. And what we found is that there is a continuum. The higher functioning someone is, the more repetition they can handle. You get down the line, and the more severe someone is, the less they can handle. Okay, so they need much more variability. So I'm going to wrap this back around to us. Typical people who are fairly sensitive people, I think. I think by and large, people who are kind of exploring these worlds, the altered consciousness worlds, tend to be more sensitive to their environment around them. I think a lot of us are looking for ways of understanding a lot of the nonverbal cues that we pick up that are bigger and more impactful to us than the average person who doesn't feel the energy of someone walking by them, or the energy of what someone is saying not matching what they're saying, and saying, and this disconnect is really uncomfortable. A lot of people will just take the words for what they are and say, okay, I'm just going to ignore the voice inside of me that says that's not true. A lot of us hear the voice, and we've learned to honor the voice. And we want to amplify that voice because that aids us in a way. We tend to be also sensitive, like the person down the line, of severity of autism. Therefore, we're not going to be able to handle the repetition of the drumming as someone else might. So you probably need someone who you can't do a Shamanic journey probably. And if you can, that drum needs to vary in tone, or the drummer needs to be not such a good drummer. So it ends up sounding, you know, it's chaotic.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I noticed from the get-go when I was teaching shamanic journeying classes. I marketed them as an alternative for failed meditators. Because that's what I was. I wasn't interested in shamanic work necessarily. I wasn't interested in the journeys themselves. I was interested in facilitating a deeper meditation because I had monkey mind. I have ADHD, by the way. So for me to focus my mind, that didn't work. I was all over the place. I found the drumming really helped. So I was teaching these classes using this. And I learned pretty quickly early on that the people coming to this class who classify themselves as failed meditators instead of I want a shamanic journey couldn't handle that repetitive beat. They needed a variable rhythm. And so I got a bunch of variable rhythms that I do that are not really complicated, but enough variability to keep the brain engaged. Because what happens neurologically is the repetition becomes noise after a while. And it because the drumming is got a amplitude to it, a volume to it, it's not like a dripping faucet or an air conditioner in the background that you get used to. You know, you've got a faucet in the other room dripping and dripping. And at first, it's kind of really annoying. And every time you hear the drip, your awareness shifts over to it and you have to draw yourself back. Oh, that's just a faucet. That's just the faucet. And then after a while, your brain says, it's just the faucet, without having to get your conscious brain to respond to it. But it's far enough in the background that your brain can just shut it out. And so you can then attend to the things that are important, because that dripping faucet is not important to you. It's not important to your survival. There's no reason to pay attention to it. You have the drumming come in that has a similar quality of repetitiveness as the dripping faucet is. Granted, it's faster, but it's just as regular. And you can't tune it out because it's loud enough and it's overwhelming enough and it's engaging enough that you're like, but I know what it is. I figured it out and I don't want to hear it anymore. And stop it, please. You know, and then you get annoyed. Mm-hmm. Where you change the rhythm up a little bit, and I'll just do a slight variation here. So shamanic rhythm sounds like this. If I were just to make a syncopation out of it, for instance. You can't predict what's going to happen next. And therefore, the brain stays engaged. And so for the people who get annoyed by certain drumming, it's probably too repetitive. There's also the possibility that it's too loud. One thing we find with our custom programs is you got to hit the brain at a level that doesn't overwhelm the nervous system, that allows the brain to engage without forcing your conscious awareness to focus its attention there. You want your conscious awareness on something else. So if you've ever been to a shamanic journeying course or something, and a guy's got a drum and it's really loud, he's trying to create, you know, this huge reverberative sound in the room, and it's overwhelming, that can be really hard for many of us, because now that part of our brain, a part of the brain called the amygdala, who's always looking around for threats to our survival. This is part of our reticular activating system, core nerve net in the core of our brain that is really about basic survival. And one of the keys to basic survival is to be an attentive and aware of something that might be a threat. And if this sound is so huge that you can't also be attuned to other things around, many of us are going to get really anxious. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're going to say, don't do that. And that's one of the reasons our listening to the music I create, we ask to play it at a level that you can hear the environment around. That way you're not overwhelmed, and you're that sensitive primitive brain isn't unable to hear or perceive those other threats that might come along. So that's a very long answer again to the question. So,
well, I like your long answers because I am so in love and fascinated by the science. And you know, it's interesting because that is like the repetitive is what makes me crazy. Like there, it has to have some sort of change or something for me, or else it's overwhelming. And it's interesting you talk about overwhelming the nervous system. There's so much science now incorporated with parapsychology about our nervous system and how our nervous system is really bringing in these light codes and different things, you know, in order for us to function. And especially this year with all the changes happening on the planet and lots of folks talking about ascension and all these things. And so I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about with the nervous system and drumming or the nervous system and meditation, because my nervous system has been a challenge. And I can say I wrote a whole book about it, but I went through an experience where I actually had symptoms of MS, and luckily my brain's very healthy, but my body actually went through that same process and those same symptoms because of exposure to toxicity. But of course, in the weirdo realms, there's a whole link to that with the nervous system and your nervous system kind of transforming and changing. And I just have a very sensitive nervous system. So it's interesting to me, you're talking about the nervous system and drumming and sound and all those things, because there's certain concerts, certain music, certain things that are just overwhelming to me, certain people that are overwhelming to me. So I'm just curious if you want to say anything more about the nervous system.
Being what I would consider myself a fairly sensitive person with ADHD, which they're almost opposing qualities, but, because a lot of people with ADHD don't have the ability to, one of the classic examples of diagnosis with ADHD is saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, not really understanding social cues, right? Because number one, we're 5 miles, I don't want to say ahead, in another direction from everybody else all the time because our brains are going. But on top of that, we are, I think, picking up so much information. And this is where I equate it to the kids with autism. When I talk about kids and adults, when I talk about them needing that variability, I see them as their brains working so quickly to decipher the patterns that I'm playing with the drum that they have very little tolerance for the repetition. And so I consider the autistic brain as being exceptionally sensitive. And that's part of why you see that social withdrawal, why you see the acting out and the overwhelm, the sensory overwhelm, because they have a super sensitive nervous system. And that keyed me in a little bit to my own sensitivities, especially as somebody with ADHD. That everything comes at us, and us could mean, you know, if you're sensitive or not, but those of you who consider yourself sensitive, you'll know this, at a higher volume than anybody else. And oftentimes, it comes at the same volume. So we have a hard time sometimes being able to turn down one aspect of the sensory input that we're seeing over another. In other words, that filtering mechanism, it's called discrimination, auditory discrimination, tactile discrimination. Many of us, it's auditory or visual. And beyond that, subtle energy. But that's not part of the way sensory integration, the sensory professionals look at it. That's not part of the sensory profile. But the ability to filter out and separate the different levels of input we're seeing. So if we can learn how to do that, if we can learn how to turn down the volume of that one thing, or at least for the sensitive people, like you say, you're describing, you know, some people are overwhelming, to be able to, the way one of my teachers taught me with it was to be non-resistant. In other words, when that person's presence, their, for lack of a better word, energy, slams into me, I can let it flow through and past rather than letting it grab onto me and knock me over. So part of what I've tried to do with what I'm doing is looking at the two aspects of what I consider sensitivity. One is external sensory sensitivity. And this would be your physical senses, your auditory system, your visual system, your tactile system, vestibular proprioception, and really looking at how we interact on a body level in the world and where we're sensitive and where we're not, where we don't have ability to discriminate the different stimulus that comes at us because it's all overwhelming, versus that subtle energy sensitivity, what it means to the way one of my teachers described it years ago was discern when the energy and the words don't match, when the intention and the underlying energy don't match, when somebody's telling you one thing but you're feeling something else, when somebody's trying to convince you of something when you know that that's not true, and how do you deal with that without lashing out? Because a lot of us will then get really angry and say, but you're lying to me. They don't know it many times, by the way. And that's what makes it even crazier, because now we start feeling crazy because we're getting this underlying message, right? That hopefully we learn to trust while the world is telling us something else and we're supposed to believe that, you know? And so I've been looking a lot at what that subtle energy sensitivity is all about, because that's the one that can make us feel the craziest. That's one that has the less support in our very concrete physical world. And that's the one that when I learned how to deal with that from one of my teachers back in the late 80s, that's when I didn't feel depression any longer. That's when I didn't feel like I was crazy any longer. I was able to separate and say, oh, okay, that's what's going on. I'm not crazy. I'm picking up this thing that I need to at least acknowledge that I'm picking up something, whether I want to believe it or not, whether I want to let it override what's going on in the physical world. That's a different choice. But at least knowing that I'm not nuts to feel that feeling, and then I don't have to hold it in and I don't have to let it mess my life up. So that's something we've been looking at a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's huge right now for 2020 and all that's happening around us, for sure, is having that discernment and trusting in what you know is true and right versus what might be told to you. And yeah, for sure. I think it's a great segue into your new course. I really want to talk. I got your newsletter about this new course for sensitives, and I was like, my gosh, don't we need this? And everybody who's in our community who's listening now or later on the replay, I know you're going to be excited about this. Do you want to share about your new course?
Yeah, it's called REI for Sensitive People, and it's incorporated our rhythmic entrainment intervention, our custom program for sensory processing, which is what we've been doing since the early 90s, really looking at helping the sensory system, auditory, tactile, vestibular, proprioception, really kind of organize itself, because many of us have areas where we're overstimulated or understimulated. And so this program, I call it a hybrid, because it's a hybrid of our custom program focused on sensory processing, and a course developing the meditation skills to be able to see and discern these subtle energies and be able to work with what our subtle energy body is, being able to understand what we're picking up, and to develop a vocabulary to be able to respond to that in a healthy way. First step is to recognize that we do get messages on this other realm that we need to learn to honor. And then the second step is to be able to understand what those messages are and then develop the skill set to be able to respond to the different things that are happening with us along those lines. And it's based upon a course that I, an 18-month course I took. I think it was 1989 and 90, where we really just spent time working at the energetic body and worked with meditating around it and clearing out the energy and labeling the energy. And it's a really powerful process that was something I wasn't wanting to acknowledge in public for years. Our Strong Institute is a very clinically driven, scientifically driven company. Our custom program is really not about anything other than, you know, helping the sensory system organize itself. But the bottom line for what I've always done is to build the programs based upon my own intuitive sense of how to do that. And that comes from this energetic work that I had done. So it felt like it was an appropriate time now to pull these two together, even though it feels kind of risky to me because it's acknowledging an avenue of what I do with the drumming in my work that is outside and apart from a very clinically driven Strong Institute work. But I feel like it's the right time. So
I agree, and I'm excited about it. And there are just hundreds and hundreds of people in this community that I know would benefit from this and are looking for something like this to continue to support their own growth and development, their own understanding of themselves. And, you know, I think one of the last things I wanted to, you know, just touch on or whatever we want to say is we're in this time of change, you know, this awakening time. And I think it's absolutely the perfect time for a course like this to come out because I think we're all starting to connect in different ways and have different experiences and consciousness in our day-to-day life that maybe we never had experienced before. I mean, even myself, who is very familiar with, you know, connecting with people who've passed away and all sorts of stuff in my daily life, it is more. It is heightened. And I think the sensitivity is heightened because of everything that's happening. We're being bombarded with all of these messaging and just energy that is a lot to handle. So being able to understand how to manage that is huge.
Even just recognizing this undertone, this undercurrent of anxiety that we're all feeling, recognizing that that's just a global thing right now. I have to remind myself that that's not mine. That's not me. That's me picking up on everything else out there. I need to not buy into the panic that is understandably there.
Yeah.
And, you know, acknowledging that it exists is a really big one right now. And
yeah.
It's something I need to keep reminding myself. So.
Yeah. Oh, Jeff, I just love having you on. I could really talk to you for hours and hours. It's amazing how much time flies in this little box of virtual.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for having me on again. It's always fun to talk to with you.
So. I just love it. And I'm so thankful to my husband, Scott, who's at work right now because he's a drummer and he's the one who really found you. And we saw all of your information and was like, oh my gosh, this person, we have to connect. And I'd love to give you space here at the end to just share a little bit about how folks can connect with you. Jeff's website's across the screen and everything's in the show notes. But if there's things you want to share, anything you want to share or what's accessible to people right now, anything. I just want to give you space to share that.
Oh, well, thank you. Nothing really special going on. You know, go to Strong Institute. We have this new REI for sensitive people course available. If you, we should put a discount code on the notes under here.
Okay.
To get a discount to be able to take this course. It's pretty powerful. But the main thing that I think is important right now is to remember to be connecting, remember to breathe, because I think it's so easy to get caught up. For instance, I can't read the news anymore. I can't do it. It's just too much. And part of it is because I don't do Facebook. Other than we post, I have a page. and I'll post my videos on there. But I don't scroll because there's so much stuff that just I look at it and go, this isn't true. And all these lies that are being thrown at us from all these different directions, it's easy to start feeling crazy. It's easy to start losing one's groundedness and forget that none of that is real. And so here we are in social media. And, you know, well, what do you do? But we have to be really careful and discerning about what's out there because it's crazy making. So
I agree. You know, the collective that I work with, you know, wherever they are, light years away or whatever, wherever they are, you know, they just continue to say, don't be distracted by the narrative. And I think, you know, the power that we have is being able to use tools like what you have to offer at the Strong Institute to be able to connect within and to connect in those states of awareness where we know truth and have discernment. And I mean, it's really important. It's an important, especially now more than ever. And I think your work too with, you know, these gifted children to me, you know, just a brief one-off is, you know, autistic children have always been really special to me and adults. And in my career working in fashion, I worked with a lot of them throughout the years. You know, they'd come and be part of our company or our store or whatever. And their energy fields are incredible. And as a person who sees a light body, autistic children with any kind of developmental issues and adults as well, have these incredible geometric patterns in their energy fields. And they're so brilliant. And it absolutely coincides with what you're talking about, how quickly their brains work, you know, and there's more and more and more of these gifted children coming to the planet to be a part of this journey that we're all on and being able to support them, being able to understand ourselves. We have that truth within us and we have to stop looking externally for it because we're not necessarily getting it. So,
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jeff. We will definitely have you back. We're already planning cool stuff for 2021. So I think, yeah, we got to get you back on and talk more about all these different things. And thank you to everybody who's been listening and watching. We love you so much and great audience today. And stay tuned. And I'll be back at 3 o'clock with Krista talking about women's entrepreneurship. So completely separate topic, but still important. And thank you so much, Jeff.
Well, thank you. Take care.
Thank you, guys.